92, we present the fabulous What's the Scenario remix. Whereas there are seven MCs, six which are in physical form, one which is in spiritual essence, and he goes by the name.
All right, here we go. Another episode of the Scenario remix, man. We hitting y'all. We hitting y'all heavy.
Getting more remixes out these days than the actual show.
Look, it's Puffy did a lot more remixes than regular songs too, that you know.
That's probably fair. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, there's a lot of songs out there.
We at the Puffy stage of the pod?
No. I think we are though, because we put out a lot of regular scenarios. We didn't do a lot of regular club appearances with 20 people in the crowd. It's time to go in to get these remixes up.
All right, well shit, let's run them. I'm happy that for our remix to be a chance where we get to bring in actual people we know get into the mix. It's been one good upside of the quarantine is that we didn't got a chance to talk with a whole lot more people than we usually could and get access to them. And you know what I'm saying, that doesn't stop today, man, because we got and actually this is funny, we got two of the guys and actually two of the people I talk to every day in some capacity on the show. I actually end up talking to them more than I talk to my family right now during this quarantine thing. We got one of my homeboys though, man. Brad,
we need to go and make this group but then and just get it popping for real then.
Just run the whole thing through.
Just
man.
run everything together.
we got one of my main homeboys here, man, Brad Edwards. Brad, we appreciate you making time to slide through, man.
Man, I appreciate the opportunity, man. I'm looking forward to this, bro. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be a good run, man. You got a lot of stuff going on. But before we get into that and get into all them things, I just wanted to give y'all the floor real quick to work out some natural that y'all got. Because I got some questions as an outsider to that community that I want to throw out. But I want for y'all to work through the St. Louis black private school beef here real quick just to make sure that we can get that done so we don't have to have any, you know, break up the show or anything later on.
I mean, man, you can't really consider it beef when there's no competition, you know what I mean?
See, here we go. See, this is the funny thing, though. So I met Brett. Do you remember when I met you, though, at Nikki's house?
Yeah.
So my brother instigated. He's like, hey, man, you know homeboy with the CBC. So I literally walked through the door with my bottle because she's like, bring bottles to hang out. And he was like, you know homeboy with the CBC. I was like, oh, word? You?
Yeah, man. You get the alcohol and that CBC slew mixing together, man.
But at the same time, look, this thing is those CBC cats, man, they barely got, you know, into college. They basically are like, you know, the wool of the private schools.
Damn. Right.
They can hoop. They can hoop. They can play everything, though. But, you know, go get your vaccine at wool, though.
All right, look, you know, we dominated in the sports.
Yeah, that's it. Stop.
All the women.
That's it.
You know what I'm saying?
No. Hard stop.
Guys,
that's it.
The two guys were like, you know, the Jack and Jill, you know what I mean?
Oh, kind of now we guys. Jack and Jill.
You know, like if you did play football, you played at NYA or Florissant or some shit, you went down to Dickey or Hoover. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, and it's funny.
That's crazy because that's not true at all.
It's funny because, like, you know, I'm cool with so many now. Like, Stefan is a really good friend. Brendan, of course, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. All
Kalen, you know what I'm saying? Hey, but Kalen. I never knew any of these guys in high school, and I never knew any school guys in high school. So it's like they really just stayed in their own little bubble where it was safe or something. I don't know.
No,
but we was outside. Everybody knew.
But see, you know what? That may be a little bit different than the times thing, though, because we was outside. I have a story about when Justin Tatum and Larry Hughes almost jumped me.
Why would they need that? They're like 6'5 apiece.
No, because I was talking big shit, though. Like, it was
you got to deserve it.
No. Oh, no. Chickens was coming home to roost. Like, the situation, chickens was coming home to roost. I literally was like, this is early. So, literally this time I was working the school paper. I was the sports editor for the school paper, the prep news. And I was like, basically, like, if I see them, it's on site. I don't remember. It was somewhere. I'm just trying to update it. You know,
that's a bad investment. Yeah, that's a really bad investment in your lifestyle.
Like, so, but see, my best friend though, shout to Thomas. You know, your frat brother Thomas Elliott. He's 6'8", 330 pounds. So he always rolling with me. So I always had my nice you know, situation. My other boy Jay was a running back on the squad, so everybody was I was insulated with some great brothers around me to be able to talk my shit.
So basically, you was like the slowdown of the football team or something.
No, that's not true. I was more of if we go to the wire, I was more of the stringer, and Avon was really had all the muscle and shit on the back end.
Oh, see, no, don't in any situation we know you don't want to be stringer.
Yeah, so, exactly.
So I'm gonna give some impressions as a public school guy. You know, I just did what I could. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it just I got by. We're all in the same district though, because SLU, CBC, Kirkwood, U City, and Ladue were all in the same districts
for a long time.
So we all played against each other there, and my first thought as a freshman, I was like, where the hell are these brothers at in these all-boys schools? So there's my point. I'm going to throw it out. What's it like going to school and you don't see nothing but dudes all day? Is that a challenge? Is that a thing? Because I would feel like it would be way more fights. I wouldn't be in a good place. I'd be fighting a lot.
It's almost like a prison, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, you get used to – it's like a prison. Yeah, you get on furlough after hours.
you get a uniform.
Yep. we had a dress code.
You go get a square meal. You go get some time outside.
Yep, and you get to play your sports. You get to do all your
So it's like a white-collar prison, basically.
So, and Brad, a bit of tribute this, though. If any girls came up to school for anything, it was like white, black, whoever. Yo, Cass is up in them doors like, yo, they on the yard? Is girls here? Like,
hey, no, that's dead ass. No, I remember I went to Lutheran grade schools all throughout coming up. So I was supposed to go to Lutheran. No.
Oh, word, okay.
But my parents were like, hey, you know, you're going to CBC. I'm like, what's that? Like, I remember seeing Larry and Justin play East.
So you went to the old CBC? Did you go to the old CBC or the new CBC?
Yeah, I was the first class to graduate from the new school.
Okay, okay.
So when I got there, you know, I'm like, what the fuck? You're like, all boys? I'm not going to all boys school. Like, my best friend from grade school, we were going there together. His brother was about to be a senior. So getting there, I initially hated it every day.
Mm-hmm. Except that first year is horrible.
To realize, once I was in the mix, I'm like, all right, well, I get a chance to focus on my academics. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, when all the new J's and everything was coming out, I get to buy mine on Saturday, but I don't wear mine during the week like all the public school kids. So mine gonna be fresh for months.
All the time. Look, all school boy, all boy school dude was fresh all the time on the weekends.
But you know, it's one of the things, man, that afterwards, I appreciate the hell out of it. And like you said, man, like it was kind of like a prison setting because you have all these boys all day. So all you doing is zoning.
I'm talking about, like, people don't understand. There was a lot of fight, and like a small, maybe not fights like brawls, but like a lot of aggressive nature going on.
That's all you had was pent up testosterone and aggression and dicks. These white kids drew dicks on everything, bro.
Yes.
Like textbooks, fucking lockers, desk. Like, that's why, like, my sense of humor is so different compared to most people. Like, I find a lot of shit funny that people probably don't find funny. It's because I grew up for years of seeing kids drawing dicks on everything. So, like, stuff doesn't bother me. You know what I'm saying? Like, so when I got to college, I was the most, like, rambunctious. Like, me and this other guy who went to a prep school, or he went to a boarding school, we would do all kind of wild shit because we come from this kind of, you know what I mean, just aggressive-ass environment versus people who were normalized. You know what I'm saying? With, like, seeing chicks and all that stuff on a regular basis, man. But I wouldn't have.
But also, your game had to be tight. This is before the Instagram, all this stuff where it's online. Mm-hmm. Like, we was attackers. Like, if it was you didn't want no all boys school dudes to come to your party because we coming in to get somebody.
Because, I mean, we on limited, like you said, we furloughed for the
weekend. Yeah, we furloughed for the weekend.
I gotta make the most of these 72 hours.
Yes.
So that was the thing. Yeah, I mean, because obviously, man, and being in St. Louis, obviously, you had different things. We had, inside the school, we had different neighborhoods that just didn't like each other. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you had to overcome that. But that's
to this day does not make sense for me for y'all UC guys. Like, I don't understand where y'all got this sense of North Side in y'all.
Like, I always say the same thing to Matt, though. Hey, Brad, I say Matt all the time. I'm like, dude, y'all act like y'all from the Ville, where I grew up, in the Ville.
I mean, goddamn, my house got shot twice growing up. So
right, but that's the city, though. That's not the Ville. It's not St. Louis Avenue.
I never said that. But I mean, what I do know is that it's different neighborhoods that don't rock with each other, no matter where you at. If you know, if you got to know where you got to be. I just
never understood that with U City, because U City is like, you know, see, I see U City Blood Gang all the time and all this other stuff. And I was really always throwing
U City. U City's got two different sides to it. There's one side on, there's the side on Heman that's on the other side. All of it's divided by Heman Park.
And really,
all of it's divided.
That makes
by,
sense. Okay.
It's all runs on Olive. So like basically, Olive separates white folks from black folks. Right?
Of course.
It's super segregated, just like all of St. Louis. But like U City, it's super compact segregated. Like there's a white Walgreens, a black Walgreens. You know what I'm saying? There's a white Chinooks and a black Chinook. You know,
damn, I didn't even think about that. That's so true.
It don't make sense though, right? Yeah.
They're different worlds though. You know what I'm saying? So like the way that one side operates is against the other. And a little bit of it is that crabs in the barrel mentality when you got neighborhoods versus neighborhoods. Because you do got cats that was bloods on one part, and then you got a different neighborhood of bloods, and then you got some Crips closest thing you could call it to that over. It's closer to like the dividing side by Wellston. And then you got Normandy on the other side of it that none of us like. And we would always get into it with them up on by like Page and Ferguson and Pennsylvania and all of that. And then you got Wellston over there, and then you got the city over there by Eastgate. So you got all of these different.
So y'all would combine to fight Normandy though. Like if it was went down, U City's gonna be
U City versus Normandy. For sure.
But that's how private school dudes were with like them Parkway cats and Kirkwood cats.
I'm glad you said that because I was gonna bring this together to help this make sense for everybody. People go at us because we're like, it's us against everybody else. Like, hey, I'll beat up my little brother, but you're not going to beat up my little brother. You know what I'm saying? So the way that it worked and the way I started kind of peeping this as I worked through high school a little bit and played against more private schools was I was like, oh, this shit right here kind of reminds me of like how it is at high school. Like when you're a freshman, when you get to high school, at my school at least, I'm sure there's other high schools like that too. You come in there and you be like, hey, I got to figure out who's from where so I can make sure that everything is good there. Because when I got to U City in 97, that shit looked like Eastside High. I was like, dog, this sucks. We got metal detectors, you know what I'm saying? And like by the time I left, you couldn't even leave the school. They let people leave the school in the mid-90s. But if you left the school, they stopped letting you because people were coming back up in there and letting people in. You know what I'm saying? So people were selling fucking work downstairs by the cafeteria. They locked that bitch down. But like, and I know at the private schools that they was having all sorts of stuff. You could probably get everything you wanted up in CBC or SLU or Chaminade, Dismet, any of them places. But
yeah, we started conforming to us, but yeah, you definitely like.
But
you
had the thing is though, Matt, though, all those schools had different styles though, or like dudes though, and like even like the black dudes actually ends up having different styles of it. Like so, like CBC were the athletic dudes, you know what I'm saying? Like the Vianney cats was kind of like the Vianney cats, like your blue collar black dudes, kind of like Chaminade dudes had the paper though. Like if you went to Chaminade, they weren't giving out scouts to Chaminade to like after us. Like when your Jason Tatum's and all them cats start coming through, they weren't giving on no scouts and no Chaminade to be doing shit. So
and Chaminade was high as hell.
Yes, and Chaminade's a boarding school. Two people don't know that Chaminade's a boarding school as well. And then you had the Smet, which is basically like SLU's little brother, which is they're very true. It's SLU West because it was only created because SLU got overpacked and they wanted to have a school in West County as well. So they made another school, the Smet. That's literally what it is.
So when I was in high school between 98 and 01. So when when I started realizing right away that when we played CBC, it wasn't going to be a good scene. It just wasn't going to be. It just wasn't going to be. There was no sport that we were able to compete with CBC in because they had cats. When I was there, it was like Tamar Macklin, Ryan Woods, Ryan Johnson was there. Larry had just graduated right before my freshman year. Larry and Justin and all of them, but I knew we wasn't going to compete with them because they played for my uncle on the Eagles.
Because Mensa was at CBC at first before he came to U City.
Mensa came to U City, and then Mensa ended up getting thrown off the team senior year, which was bullshit. Like you never deserve that, but that's a story for another time. But like CBC was a whole thing. But when we competed against them, it was just like playing some brothers, just some. Bigger ones, you know what I'm saying? That was, like, bigger than us. I mean, except for my freshman year, we was about the same size because our freshman year, we lost in the district final. I think CBC was kind of getting over losing Larry. Was Stricker still there? I don't know.
Stricker was there. Stricker was there. Stricker's there 98.
That's all right, so then, but we but I knew that in football, we never played any MCC schools. We played Suburban South, and in our jamborees, we played against Suburban North, which was a whole other headache.
That's a whole different.
But it's really more like the debate like between PWIs and like HBCUs.
Well, hold on, before you do that, because that's where I wanted to link us to next. I started realizing this. I'm okay with CBC, and it ended up being like that when we got to school and I got to college, and then like one of my main homeboys, Chris Crosby, was from CBC, and he's cool.
He's a dope
like
receiver.
He's
a dope ass receiver.
Hell yeah, but I mean, like, I started realizing that I didn't mess with the Smet because them cats was in there. The chance that they was doing, I was like, yo, I'm gonna come in these stands on these cats.
Yo,
like,
so no,
we,
real
and,
talk,
and we played
man.
Against Shaman, and they had my guy David Lee on there. I said, we definitely don't have a chance against him. So. But I knew the Smet I didn't mess with. Deani seemed like everybody got on their heads. And then Slew we competed with. And then the Smet just had a crazy basketball team. But they wasn't good at football yet. Years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But CBC was always like, CBC reminded me of the Qs. They was just some big ass
exactly.
Dudes.
That's what CBC is, the Qs. Like, so I remember, I don't even remember, Brad, I don't remember when I put out that meme that went viral that I put up CBC and Slew as a with Black Panther, where I had Slew as T'Challa, and then I had CBC as Manape, and everything.
The dude that came out the mountains, the same.
Yeah, that's exactly what. That's accurate. Like it was accurate. Like I had so many people hit me like, "Yo, I can't get on your comments, but that's so accurate."
Mbatu.
Yeah, Mbatu. Yeah.
So they like connect on that though. So Brad, you leave from there, and then you head out to Fisk, right?
Yeah. Now I went full HBCU.
And that's a culture shock. I mean, that's not culture shock because CBC prepared you for anywhere you're going to be able to go, you know, in general, you know, academically. But how was that coming from there? And then you go to all black, and then you by TSU, Vanderbilt, Belmont, MTSU, all those spots.
Bro, you had no middle ground in school. You went from the far right to the far left and then came out in the middle on the end.
So all right. So my academic background kind of like made my situation different. So like I went to, you guys familiar with Dwight McDaniels?
Yeah.
So I went to Dwight McDaniels. From,
but then did they change the name? They changed the name of the school to something else, right, or something like that, or?
I don't know at this point.
Cause it was Alcohol Ferry, right?
Yeah. So yeah. I left there in fifth grade. So I went there from kindergarten to fifth grade, and that's. Literally all black. Like there was not one white student in there. And that was a private Christian school. So like a lot of people that went to a lot of different schools went there. Like York County, you know what I'm saying? Your parents, you know,
I went to Storm and Stufflin, Brett.
Okay, so Storm and Stufflin was the same thing, you know what I'm saying? So it was literally like, you know, that was kinda like when North County was starting to get an influx of you know, pretty well to do black folks that wanted to send their kids to schools but not necessarily public schools. Either went to Dwight McDaniels, Storm and Stufflin. I think it's another one. I can't think of the name of right now.
And some of those Catholic schools too, though, like Loretto and like St. Jerome, St. John
yeah,
James.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All those right, Catholic so schools up over there. It's like a corridor of all these black Catholic schools that's like basically mm-hmm. bop.
So I went from Dwight McDaniels to River Rose Lutheran, which was all black. I think it was one white kid there, and I got into a fight.
Was River Rose in Baton? Was River Rose was that in Baton, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in Baton. So then I went to Salem Lutheran, which is all white, pretty much. That's the first time, literally the first time I had ever went to school, white was in the eighth grade. So I went from there to CBC, and that was my biggest culture shock in my entire life, was going to school and seeing how white kids really acted. Because I'm playing baseball, all black baseball team, football, Matthew Dickey, so that's all black, basketball is all black. I've literally been around black kids my entire life. So going to CBC was different, but going to HBCU was not that. The only shock for me was now instead of me sitting next to Billy and Bob and Justin in class, it's 12-1, 13-1 women to me. Like I remember being in my orientation room and I was literally shaking. Bruh, who am I finna get in?
Because you got that killer in you because you've been in jail. You've been in jail for the last 4 years.
I did pretty well in high school, but yeah, damn, I got to college. It's, team what that was. It was different. But
it's funny. It's funny that you say that too, because I had that reverse. You know what I'm saying? Like
really?
we had a few white kids at U City, but it wasn't a whole lot because a lot that was around the time when people started being like, "We're not sending them here." That's when like places like Luther North and you know different places like that, people started leaving and going to some of the private schools. So I think we were like 92% black. So really? When
I thought it was more white kids than that. That's crazy.
Not well. There's more that live there, but they leave before the high
school. No, they end up going to like John Burroughs, MICDS, yeah, stuff like that.
So there's U City has two black elementary schools that are over where I grew up. Both neighborhoods I grew up in were all black, like no white kids in them at all. And then you got a couple that are blended, and then you have an all white one that's over there, Lynn Park, that's over there, like in the richest part of U City. Like,
where's Lynn Park at though?
Right off of like Forest Park, right there, Forest Park Expressway, right before you get to the to Clayton and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's a school over there. Why? I didn't even know it was a school over there.
Elementary school. So you got all of that. So it's that segregation though. It's on the other side of Heman Park. You know what I'm saying? But the three elementary schools on the other side of Heman Park, black. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So like, I grew up in like a really, you know, segregated environment. And the only time that I really got to see that was when I was playing baseball, because I started going out playing in competitive leagues and travel leagues and stuff like that. So I started playing with all white people then, but that was it for me. You know what I'm saying? But when I got to Mizzou, it was like literally like trying to look through the crowd to find the black people. Mm-hmm, and once you get there, like that was the biggest shock for me. I was stunned. I was like, yo, I don't know how I'm gonna do this. Like, this is a whole nother world. You know what I'm saying? But then once you get into the black community at a PWI, it's super tight-knit. And that's one of the things that, like, I always try to bring up, you know, when you have what I think is the most ridiculous debate that our culture has, PWI versus HBCU. Mm-hmm. And I try to say they're different experiences, but as far as blackness, they're just, one is a larger community and one is a very small, but usually, in my experience at least, a tight one. Not less, more or less tight than HBCU. It's just that when there's fewer of you, and you can kind of speak to this, like with your high school experiences, both of y'all, you're going to kind of link up because of that, you know?
Automatically, you're going to link up. This is what it is.
That's why I bring that up. Right. Right.
In high school, we definitely had like a strong, and I love Coach Scott, man. Chris Scott was our track coach. And he made sure that through the OBCA, I had a funny story about this too. So, In college, I had gotten into some trouble, man, one summer before going back to my sophomore year. Long story short, I ended up
in St. Louis. You got in trouble in St. Louis or back
in St. Louis.
Okay.
So, long story short, man, I ended up getting like a little trespassing charge or whatever, being in the park out the door, just messing around like 2021. So, I go to court and the judge, I had a CBC, so, you know, they teach you. Always have, you know, speak to CBC or school or whatever, you know what I'm saying? It's a thing with the laws. So I had a CBC alumni shirt on. So, you know, the judge was like, oh, so this is what they teach you there, huh? And I'm like, sorry, excuse me. He was like, I'm a SLU guy. When the police came to the park, I saw the police and I ran, you know what I'm saying? And I left like the two chicks and my cousin that was with us. I just ran. Like, that was my first instinct. So he's like, yeah, you know, the teacher CBC just leave the women behind, huh? I was like, hey, I did what I had to do. He was like, all right, man, don't worry about it. The case dismissed, just play the court call. Yo. You know what I'm saying? And so, me being young and immature and irresponsible, I never paid the court costs, whatever. So I get to the jail. Florence in jail, got locked up like the day before New Year's Eve. And the guy above me, there's three of us in the cell, and we're talking or whatever. And somehow high school came up. I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm with CBC. Dude above me, like, oh, shit, for real? Like, they still got the OBCA there? He's like, I'm the one who started the OBCA. I'm like, ain't this about a
thing? Oh,
like,
damn.
Then another guy who went to CBC who had just called me about bailing him out, he's in the cell across the hall. I'm like, this is a terrible day.
That's what CBC, but this is my point. That's how CBC motherfuckers get down.
Oh, man, it was, that was terrible, man. That's the first time I told that one, but yeah, that shit.
You see the SLU dude trying to get the olive branch to him and everything, and this dude is like, you know what, fuck SLU. Like, you know, I'm not going to pay these court costs.
This is a hell of a week for the scenario, for the remix, talking about jail stories, because we have my line brother on earlier this week.
He's talking about how y'all met.
how he met me in the back of a police car, and I was just like, damn, I forgot about that. I wouldn't have brought that question up if I would have known that that's what it
was. That wasn't on the table. You didn't even think that was going to happen. You didn't...
Right. So, like, and so the other thing, so it's funny that y'all got all these parallels together, though, because the other thing is, in both of y'all, I'm about the age, y'all, so just be ready for it. In both of y'all generations and in both of y'all lanes, y'all was throwing events in St. Louis at a different time. So I'm curious to know y'all outlook on like the social scene in St. Louis. And you know, amongst Black folks, kind of looking back at it, you know, shit, because what are we looking at? How many years span are we looking at? Like 20, damn near?
Yeah, we started in 05.
All right, so I mean, you know, 15 years into the game, you know what I'm saying? I mean, and it's changed a lot. Like, I feel like it changes every 2 or 3 years in St. Louis as a turnover. But you know what I'm saying? We're talking about some things that got some commonalities in point. So I'm gonna throw out a couple places just to kind of get started. Some things I know that are near and dear to people's heart. 609.
609 was actually one of our first biggest parties on the low was 609. So, back in 06, 07, 06, 07? Somewhere like that.
The reason why I throw out 609, I see Brad's looking wistfully off into the distance. Just remember, give me y'all top three party venues, social venues in St. Louis in y'all time.
Okay, when you're saying that, are you talking about the atmosphere of the people or the look of the place?
Atmosphere of the people, the vibe. Like just... Okay. I had some of the best times through some of my best events, like recollections.
Mike Shannon's has got to be number one for us. For free time, it's got to be Mike Shannon's, man. We put damn near 2,000 people in there for like 5 years in a row. I mean, I couldn't. It's nowhere else.
Mike Shannon's died a tough death, too, because of Ballpark Village.
Mm. Yeah.
It was hard to watch, man. It was definitely hard.
It wasn't hard to watch for me, though, because they played us a week and a half before the glow that we in when we moved over to Atomic Cowboy and said, oh, we got a class reunion booked. And we like, motherfucker, we've been there for 5 years in a row. What are you talking about? Why would you even – you kick that class reunion out. You don't kick us out. So
was it Chaminade?
No. It was actually like Parkway Central or some bullshit. Because I keep them on board with that, though. That's why I fuck with Van about that.
No.
That's why I always tell Van we used to take their girls all the time at Parkway Central and Parkway North. That's how we met Raven. We did an invasion on Parkway North.
You met her when you were taking her? You admit the kidnapping Raven right now?
No. Raven knows. She'll tell you. Literally, that was an invasion. Sloop made an invasion on Parkway North. We made it a concerted effort. Like, you know what? We used to pick public schools like, yo, who we going to go to their game? We just like, yo, we going to go to Parkway North game. We ain't got a game. We going to go to their game.
We had a lock-in with Parkway North when I was a sophomore. Sophomore, and it was just a terrible decision. That was one of the most.
Yeah, you and Rob Hand talked about that.
Yeah, that was just super gutter. Like, it was unnecessarily gutter. Like, they should have thought more about that.
But, Brad, what about you, though, Brad? What venue for Mike Shannon's?
Well, if we're going to go three, man, I have to go. So, first of all, I gotta speak to free time. I never really was like a club person like that. So like the type of events that and the type of vibe that free time provided was something that was a reason for me to leave the house. I look forward to blow every year.
Dang, man, I'm feeling humble up in here, man. Damn, I'm feeling good. I need to call Roy Robinson and tell him, man.
I mean, I told Roy, man. I mean, and some of those guys I've dealt with, you know what I'm saying? Like, between Saigo and Free Time, you know, those are two groups, man, that I looked at and I really modeled what I was bringing and what I was doing after, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I didn't really have a bottle popping VIP kind of exclusionist kind of vibe or crowd. You know what I mean? We all wanted to hang out, do some cool shit, and be around some people that you could have some good conversations with. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like that's always how we modeled everything, and that's what Free Time and Side Group provided.
100%. So, that's what we did.
So with that said, man, 609, like 609, you know, pretty much helped catapult my career with everything, with us doing the Platinum Fridays every Friday with Chris G. And Lola was another one for me.
Lola was dope. We opened up Lola.
again, LeBron, I'm saying, like, I was there to see all that, you know what I'm saying? And that's, you know, helped me. And I think the third one, I got to kind of say the Skybox, man. Like
Skybox, we opened up the Skybox, too. I don't know.
I love the vibe in the Skybox on Friday night, man. Me and my homeboy.
I told you a story about with the me and that cab, though, that night, though, where I was getting called a nigga, right? I ever told you that story?
I don't feel like it. No, I think I'd remember that.
This not this night, but it was at the Skybox. I literally got so drunk at the first Freetown party at Skybox, I ended up breaking up with my girlfriend at the time because of that. Because I can
believe that part for sure.
Yeah, because I know I was talking reckless, and she was trying to get in with like somebody underage. I was like, "What the fuck you doing, bringing somebody?" And I just walked away. Like I didn't even like try to do anything else. Because Rose was like, "Dude, why you walk away?" He's like, "Fuck it, man. I told her not to bring nobody else."
She Darius Miles your ass in reverse.
Well, you know I told you Darius story. But I mean. Like, Skybox was super dope, man. Like, St. Louis wasn't prepared for the Skybox, the construction of waves. That's what I'm saying. If you want to talk about the venues that were looks, Skybox was up there. Venue-wise looks, I don't know if you remember. What was the spot off of Broadway?
That Black had, Label?
No. Broadway going up more towards regular midtown next to the Radisson.
How far Broadway we talking? You talking about like
by the Radisson? Light? It's by the Radisson. Not that Broadway. I've never done a party there though.
No, you're still here. I'm sure you did.
Yeah. But and then that's another thing that Brad, you can even talk to too. It was Dolce. Dolce's the spot I'm talking about. Dolce's spot was beautiful. That. Beautiful spot. They had like glass, like stairs, glass hanging things. Like it was crazy, man. And it was a thing of the problem that happened in St. Louis was, and it's in general across the board, it's in every city. This is everything we go through in life as Black people, though. White people don't know how to know the difference between different types of Black people. They don't know the difference. They think we all the same person. They don't know if we coming in there for real business or not. You coming out with a full suit on, and they think you're the same thing as a dope dealing dude with a track suit on and some dope mans. You know, it's the same thing. And Dolce is one of those. We went in there, did the whole demo. We had contracts, had everything good to go. And they were like, no, we don't want that type of crowd. They start fucking up, no money coming in. They end up getting the hood motherfuckers that we never deal with. They up in there. Because they don't know the difference. They just like
they don't do their research enough to understand. It's almost like they need to have a consultant to Black folks. You know what I'm saying? Like, let me have somebody I can refer to. They can be like, all right, you should deal with this individual based on this and the third versus not dealing with this person. I'm going to kind of play devil's advocate on that, man, because I have an issue with how Black club owners have dealt with Black or dealt with promoters as well, man. Like,
I agree.
We've dealt with some white-owned spots and dealt with places out of town to where they help you help them, right? It's like you all working in sync and working together.
Well, after you're good, though, you're good. Like,
I done had situations like that start off like that with white folks, but I also had situations here with club owners like we're making you fucking a lot of money on your bar. And yet you still want more. You still want all this other extra stuff when we should be working together so that we're making sure that the other one is fed and the other one is good. Like, so am I working with you or am I working for you? And that's the one thing that I've noticed here more than anywhere else, man. I just never cared for it, man. Like, when we were at Harry's doing the day parties for that summer, man, bro, we was walking away $15,000-$16,000 in profit at the end of the day. But that was... not only the door, that was Harry being like, all right, look, y'all are selling bottles at a volume that we never do. So here, we're going to give you fucking 30, 40, 50% on the bottles. You know what I'm saying? If the bottle costs $50, we're going to give it to you for $75. You towards whatever the hell you're going towards. Because they know at the end of the day, that's money they're making that they wouldn't have made regardless.
Yep.
Versus some Black clubs would be like, I wish I want $120, period. You might be able to sell for $130, but I want my $100.
And try to get you on the door. And it'd be like, well, you know what? I need, you know.
What's your door looking like? I ain't talking about nothing. They want everything, bro.
That's the St. Louis thing, though, because Chicago is different, though. Like, when I dealt with, like, Jeff Beckham and, like, Kobe and all them cats in Chicago when we did an event up there. Like, they was getting bar splits and a full door. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They was getting 20% of the bar and a full door.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember Roy was like, I don't even need – there's no more negotiations, though. I'm done. And Roy literally just walked away and was like, no, I'm good. Like, this is all good for me. Like, I don't – and then, like, Kobe and, like, Jeff and Rob and them, they were like, no, we need – no. Roy was like, no, we are fine. We are going to be great tonight. We invite all these people from St. Louis up to Chicago. We will be fine tonight. And that, I think that's the St. Louis thing, though. That's the St. Louis thing across the board.
To me, it never sat right with me, man. Come on. I'm the kind of person, bro, I want everybody to walk away with a smile. I want everybody to win. And I just felt like they never kind of set things up for us all, for everyone to win. They always left the side with this.
Well, what's been the thing that's I got a shout out one spot that I had great times at early on too, and that was the Del Mar Lounge. I had just incredible times.
Mm, Del Mar Lounge was dope, and it was low key and chill
down there.
Yeah,
awesome.
and that's always been what I've enjoyed more. Anybody that knows me knows that I know how to get the most out of any type of party, but I've always enjoyed I enjoyed play spots like Del Mar Lounge. I mean, I felt like that kind of fell into what Soho was a little bit as well.
I'm sorry. I cannot even fucking let this whole conversation go without speaking to Soho fucking happy hour, man. Like, that's Friday happy hour was the best shit that we had as far as fucking black folks, young professionals especially. Nigga, that happy hour was, first of all, you had $5 drinks. Like, not even just bullshit, $5 for real drinks. Good ass food that was like fucking $3.50 for some wings or whatever. And the whole vibe down there was fucking amazing. Brandon, if you hear this, man, hey, look, Brandon listens.
Brandon with the Storming with me.
that was his people's school, right?
Yeah, that's his. That's his.
It was his. Bro, so man, like I love the dude, man. I love what he really wanted to do for the culture. He accomplished that, and I just hate that I think that we kind of took it for granted a little bit because once they closed down, it really showed you that there is no fucking happy hour that caters to that particular demographic.
What's now, so crazy
go to
is
a thousand hoodies, but I can't go to that.
What's so crazy is if Brandon would have opened up 3 years earlier, he'd have been great. Like, he would have been like legendary status. I think it was the time, it was a big influx in St. Louis when he opened up with that. We ended up having the Mike Brown shit, all that stuff going on right around that time he was opening, and St. Louis was just changing the way it was moving. It wasn't the same as it was in the late 2000s. You know what I'm saying? That's that shifting of people and what they wanted to kind of do, and like, and on top of it, like, motherfuckers just wanted to be more hood, and that's not just the St. Louis thing. When I talked to Kobe and Jeff and all them, that's how they shit fell off too, though, because motherfuckers wanted to be hood. They didn't want to fucking have to put on a polo and a fucking long sleeve.
That's one complaint that I hear that my lady has about St. Louis and stuff. She said she noticed during the same time, said the St. Louis just got too casual. And when it got casual, mm-hmm. people's standards of partying went down. I was like, I never really noticed it because I've been here since the fucking 80s. But you know what I'm saying? I mean,
because
when I left in 03 and came back in 10, it was a completely different thing than when I would just jump into town and come back, you know, on occasion. But it was a completely different thing. And here's one thing I wanted to get y'all thoughts on about that is obviously we're going through a point right now where everything's going to be different, you know what I'm saying, in every possible way. Coming out of this, and when we get on the other side of things and we get back to whatever things are at that point, do you feel like, I'll give my thoughts afterwards, but do you feel like St. Louis will get into a place where it has another renaissance or another groove like that as far as social life?
I was just talking to Eddie about that, man. Maybe we're going to have a TGT or something going on. I don't know that, you know, that's going to be talked about. But we were like, man, the game has been rebooted almost. Like, we have a chance to – we don't have to do a lot of events. Maybe we do some 4 times a year, whatever. But it's rebooted, and we know how to reboot it. Because it's going to be a lot more outdoor events. That's going to be the key as well, is that having an outdoor tent, being able to have, like, your section, be able to kick it with your people that came. The whole idea of, like, being packed into a 1,000-people spot is going to be done for. But also, people have to understand it's going to be a premium for that as well. You ain't paying $10 to get in there, or $20 to get in. You might pay $40 to get in this spot.
I think that you'll be able to make so much money on the other side of this thing just from the relief that people are going to have. Because you got a lot of people that's looking at it a whole lot of different ways. Like, I'm not messing with anything. I'm completely good with canceling my 2020. you know what I'm saying, and coming back on the other side of it, because I'm just uncertain about what is going to happen when you flood the streets. And I'd rather watch what happens than be a part of it, you know what I'm saying? But it's but you also going to have people that are going to be super ready to jump out there and get into the mix. So I'm curious to see if it happens in waves. Like, Brad, I know you got, you know what I'm saying, like when you're really popping, really doing your stuff, it's kind of like a little bit of a different generation, or at least a different age group than what Earl had going on. How do you see it kind of in that, in your, how your crowd and how your people might be looking at, you know what I'm saying, involved in things now?
Man, so like my age group and the people who are really patronizing our events now, they we're real lounge heavy right now. So you know, if a lounge were to come into play, I know that, you know, we would frequent that on a regular basis. I know, like we did have a younger group that was kind of coming in as we were coming from the phase out as far as coming to our events, and now like they were more of an artsy crowd. Like, I know that the generation right behind mine, they were more art events. They were more like, you know, local music. You know what I'm saying? Like, they had a nice vibe. You know what I mean? Like, I look at one of the events that's been going on the last couple of years I've yet to attend, but I plan on, is the, what is that called? Lemon Pepper Kickback. It was like, it's like a real, like, damn near house party vibe. You know what I'm saying? Just organized. You know what I'm saying? So I think those kind of events would be dope, because I feel like, you know, at this point, my age is, you know, we want to fucking have hang kickbacks, you know what I'm saying? Play cards, yeah. You know what I mean? Listen to music from a DJ. So you want to have the option to get up and dance and turn up, or have the option just kind of sit back, chill, you know, shoot the shit with your buddies and kind of chill like that. So I hope that, this is one thing I think, and I always was kind of dumbfounded by this. And, you know, Daryl, you can hopefully add some insight to this for me as well. Mm-hmm. When we were heavy in it, I always was like, man, like, why don't we all as promoters get together and kind of either map out, you know, how we're going to, like, everybody has certain big events, right? Let's make sure that we work in unison and map this stuff out. And, hey, let's get together and all kind of collab on some shit.
We tried this, man. We tried it, man. I tried to get the Black Promoter Union going. I literally tried it. We actually had it a little bit. So, but what, it's just, people want to just skirt off and do their own thing. Like, literally, we had a big meeting once at, where was it at? May have been at the Loft. Yeah, it was at the Loft. It was Free Time, Saigu, Close to Famous, Slim for Loose Cannons, Mo Spoon, Mocha Latte at the time.
That's all you need. That's everybody right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah, and
all
yeah.
you need to feel.
But the problem was, though, it was brought under bad pretenses, though. And I'll talk about that offline. But it was bad pretenses on a bigger scale. But at the same time, I think – oh, and Keith was there, too. Keith was there, too. And it was – you know, I think the competition of it got into it a lot more. So you had – we all – me and Roy and Adrian's always, like, laugh about – like, it's literally like lyric labels. Like, mm-hmm. So like we were the upstart label, you know, like we the Rockefeller Records, and then we felt Saigu was more your raucous. They gonna give you that side of the game. But then you had the old labels that were big, like your Def Jams, which would be First Fridays. You know, your Starworth labels, that are people that are gonna constantly give you hits. Mm-hmm. You know, and they got their side, but then you got the hood labels, you got your Death Rows, you got your you got your Cash Money's, you got Rap A Lot, you got Suave House, you know what I'm saying? And those, they feel their crowd is their crowd, and our crowd is our crowd, and they be like, well, shit, it don't matter, you know. And the only time we came together ever, all of us together, we have 13 promoters on the event, was when Haiti had the earthquake. Only time ever. Only time we can get 13 different promoters all together on one thing.
And it's funny that you bring it up, because literally that's why, you know, if I go back to when I was throwing parties in college underneath the frat, you know what I'm saying? That's why we had the structure that we had, where, because it would have been war. It would have just been everybody biting for the same thing and splitting the pot. You know what I'm saying? So we got together at the beginning of each year and be like, all right, the Alphas are throwing their usual party. They throw in August. Noops, y'all gonna throw y'all party at homecoming. You know what I'm saying? The AKA's gonna have their thing here for their fashion show and all this. And it just kept the peace. But you know what I'm saying? It's easier. Here's the thing though, and this is gonna be kind of spearing our conversation about our people as well. It's easier to keep the peace when for the most part, none of that money was going into our pockets. It was for the greater, it was for the greater good of what we was doing as an org. I'm not going to sit here and say that none of that money went into anybody's pocket ever, but that's just would be an outright lie. I know I wasn't taking off the top, but hey, I know that that happens on some with some chapters, some organizations or whatever, but that was the only way. Because when you put other people's interest in it and you put other people's desires, whether it's to financially benefit or whether it's just to beat a man or even just to make sure that the next person don't succeed, you're going to always make that thing go crumble. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. that's damn near the plot of The Godfather, ain't it? You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's where it's at.
But yeah, even as more to your question, Brad, like it was really like Game of Thrones, man. Like literally like you got different houses. They'll be cool for this event here, but then something else is going on here. Like we had a small Cold War going on with Saigu for a long time. Mm-hmm. And Eddie is like my big brother though, but like it was literally like a Cold War. Like, yo, damn, new cast, they didn't drop fashionably hot. Bet, all right, we finna come out with this shit though, and them motherfuckers though, in like 2 weeks, that's gonna bang on their head. And they felt the same way with us. And I don't even think we didn't do. And if the crazy thing, the first combined party we did was a dope spot. Y'all remember? What was it? XS down on the landing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, like a little basement type.
That's the only party we've ever done together.
Damn, I would never known that. I never thought that.
It's like Tupac and Biggie on one song. Like, you only got that song running. That's the only song they ever been on together. But they, like, the greatest to do it, but they only on one track together. Because we had the same, we had a similar crowds. They dipped into a different area, more artsier people than we did. We had way more professional people than they did, but then we combined over certain areas. But we would help each other as well. It was, like, weird. Like I said, it was a Cold War. It was like, all right, well, shit. Like, and then we did certain things to fuck with them that we shouldn't have did, maybe, and they did some things to us. We tried to unofficially maybe – we didn't know this, but then thinking about it, and me and Eddie talked about it literally today, and we literally almost ruined T's for the future, for a variable future. Well, that's when we did the weekend party with, like, A-Marie. That's when we had A-Marie, Terrence J., and Ocho Cinco there, okay, like for the whole weekend. And okay, and keep in mind, T's is on Sunday, but we were like, you know, because we had a coalition. It was us, First Fridays, Mo Spoon, and Keith. And we was like, yo, we're going to do a different venue every night, different everything, though. But at the same time, we realized you can't do that. You can't do a whole bazaar for the weekend with St. Louis people. They don't want to see us every day for a whole weekend. They don't want to see us Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
St. Louis people is an interesting lot that like that too. Because that works that can work in bigger cities.
The thing is, we don't realize St. Louis is never gonna be Atlanta, it's not gonna be in these other cities because people don't travel here to party. People travel to Atlanta.
They used to though.
I've never seen it. You know, dude,
First Fridays, people used to come from Kansas City, Chicago, Nashville. Oh, when First Fridays was jumping off in like the late 90s, early 2000s, yes, people would travel. Okay. So that's when Nelly popped, St. Louis was a destination city, man.
Okay, yeah, I was in junior high, so.
Don't let nobody tell you.
This dude is trying to throw shade on me saying I'm old.
I don't know nothing about that. But like, man, like, you know, just hearing you talk about this stuff, man, like, those, you know, First Friday tea, like, I had the opportunity to partner in Duke's First Fridays for a year with Fred and Harry. I have much respect for both of those guys, man. I learned a lot.
Yeah, they educated me a lot, man. Fred is my dude. Fred and Harry, both my dudes, man.
Harry taught me a lot, man, about the game and everything. And then with T's, you know, I was able to partner with T's, I think, 2 years of doing that, man. So, like, you know, for a long time, I was kind of adverse to going back and getting and finishing my college degree. Because I was going for business. I felt like I had learned so much from the game and learning, you know what I mean, how a lot of stuff works in actual, you know, practice, you know what I'm saying, implemented doing that, you know what I mean? I was like, man, fuck that degree. I'm glad I went back and got it. But, man, working with some of those guys, cause, you know, Harry, I think, has his doctorate now. And
yeah, no, Harry's an engineer. Fred's an engineer from Raleigh.
And so, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of those guys have these high levels of education, working with them, and they were very good about, you know what I mean, kind of mentoring and helping, you know, a young guy grow, you know what I'm saying, to learn the game and stuff, man. So, you know, St. Louis nightlife is not what it used to be, and it may not get back to that. I don't know what this
– I don't think it's ever going to be that, man. It's. But, man, I think nightlife in general is going to be bad, period. Like I always say, like, where is the free time? Where is the saigu now? Me and Eddie was talking about that. Eddie said there, you know, there are some. There's a little bit. He said, but they're not as inventive as us because they didn't have social media. We was out there on flyers on the cars. Man, like, like, literally on the cars. We was on the cars, man. Like, I never forgot. I almost got killed. I almost thought I got shot one time. I was putting flyers around the around the loft area. This is like 08. Yeah, 08. And some dudes rode up in a drop top on me and start throwing me up. But like, I can realize that somebody can get shot though and like not like react, because I sat there and was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I literally sat there and they're egging me, like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I didn't even. Like, I couldn't compute what was going on. And I'm like, what is going on? Like,
bro, that whole, I forgot about that whole, like, I'm a very shy person, bro. So the fact that I had to actually go fucking pass out a physical flyer to somebody. And do you know the rejection rate on giving somebody a flyer, Matt?
Fucking through the roof.
At least you're not setting yourself up for failure, my nigga. I forgot, man, but that shit was kind of cool looking back on it, you know what I'm saying? Like, it definitely, you know, I don't know, it was different. It was different.
Yeah, it was a different time. I stand by this to the day I fall. And it's funny that I'm about to say this now because about what we're getting ready to switch into Holland about. I am extraordinarily glad social media didn't exist in the heyday of me.
It was there though, but we could curate it a little bit better though. Like, are we gonna put these pictures out of the party? And like, this is how I curated the event that night.
The way it's set up now, my tactics weren't built for that. It's like when people say, could Michael Jordan be Michael Jordan now? I'm like, no, but I couldn't be who I was either now. I go back and talk to our undergrads all the time, and I say, man, I salute y'all because people watching your step every time you put your foot down. I can't even have it.
You know what, Brad? Brad, back in the day, the difference was, it wasn't social media, it was the text message. That was what it was when you had a party then. Like, so somebody be like, hey, how's it look over there? People texting each other, like, how's it look? It wasn't like, but now you got to show what that is popping. Like, god damn, like, and my thing with St. Louis, where else you going to go?
Yeah.
Like
hey, that bar is high, man. Shit.
And my thing is, like, and what happened was it became a circular thing where everybody's kept hopping around from party to party to trying to see what was going on instead of somebody to stand there and everybody flooding one spot.
Yeah.
And kicking it, and it be successful.
Yeah, nah, man, it's, bro. I don't know, man. I feel like you have to have experience with investing your time, effort, energy into something to understand kind of how to navigate some of these things, man. Like, it's a lot of stuff I see on social media where people like take the time to talk down on something that they're not even as sure of, or that they have no knowledge of, and it's like, bro, like, somebody put their energy into this, and you're speaking off the cuff, not really understanding what went into that or what weight your comment or opinion may have of that. And I don't like that shit at all.
See, that brings me to something that we was talking about, you know what I'm saying, not too long back. And we were talking about how some of the things that we see on social media right now happen, where there's so many things that people take these just fucking foot in the mud and the concrete stances on, and it's like, are we really making change happen by this, or are we saying something to be heard, or am I putting this out right now just because this moment I feel like this, but is this consistent with, you know, the other things that I'm saying and things of that nature? And it came up when, you know what I'm saying, the comment that Brad made, I think it was a Saturday morning that I peeped it, and I was just like, yo, I completely align with this. When you talking about how, you know, we see it was killed down. The brother was killed down in Georgia. And, you know, these hashtags was coming out of it. And it was just like, you know, another name, you know what I'm saying, that's getting a hashtag. But what are we doing on the other side of it? And for me, I really feel like that because, you know, I've been very frequent on our show saying, yo, what are we really doing, man? Are we moving the marker, or are we just saying something to say? And I'm more concerned that we feel passionately about things, but we're so comfortable with social media that we feel like that's moving the marker when it's really not.
Yeah, I feel like, man, people get they get so in emotionally vested for the moment, right? So right. It's easy to get upset. It's easy to go on this tangent on the social media, which again,
Let me pause this 1 second for y'all. This some a man fatally stabbed while on Zoom conference call. Somebody just sent it to me. I'm sorry. Why he on the call? Why he's on his work call?
I got this one entry boy right here. I can see
everybody paranoid. I got my doorway right here. I'm like, okay.
I got Daredevil and Spider-Man over my shoulder.
But continue though, Brad. I'm sorry, man. That shit popped up though, man. New York man was fatally stabbed Thursday while on a Zoom chat with 20 other people.
Did they see who did it at least?
Some of the participants called 911 and suspected killer. The man's son was arrested about an hour later. So his son ran up his crib.
Your own people.
But go ahead, Brad. Like, that's great. Think about you. We on here right now, though, and Brad got somebody that's come over to shake him. Like, dude, you would be bugged out.
I wouldn't be happy about that. But it would probably be one of the things that we're talking about right now where somebody finally felt strong.
Acting on it. But now, man, I'm saying, I just feel like, too many times, especially, nowadays, it's easy to show I'm not saying don't show your support and bring about awareness. I'm saying let's be conscious of what we are doing action wise as well. You know what I mean? It's one thing, for me, I rarely ever participate in any of the hashtags, any of that stuff. That's not to say that I don't care or I'm not supportive of whatever's going on, but my energy for me is better suited through the actions that I'm doing in the community and some other action things I'm taking that are taking place. I hate for people just to look at taking a stance as posting the hashtag and not thinking about what they can be doing in their own way to put some action behind it, man, and make some significant and tangible changes.
I think that what some of the things that you just hit on right there is, I really have seen that come together and see how passionate you are about putting some of those programs in place. And for me, I feel like that's an example of using the vehicle, but then really driving it, you know what I mean? And not just having the keys, but, really driving it, continuing to take it to new miles and get different places. We hit on all these other things, man, but I really wanted to, get into a dive about some of the things that you're doing there right now too. So, man, I don't even know where to start. Maybe you can tell me the best way to start, but you've really got on your philanthropy game, like on a whole nother level. I mean, I think they might not even be doing it the right service just to call it philanthropy either, because philanthropy is something you can just send a check to and say you did your part. But I mean, this is community service, philanthropy, outreach, however you want to define it. I really think that some of the things you're involved in are moving that needle for me to give you an ability to speak to some more of those things.
Yeah, I think, man, I'm not trying to be judgmental of anyone that, doesn't do what I do, because still people are doing a lot more than what I'm doing.
Sure.
But I feel like I am able to speak a little bit more about that because I am, making sure that I put that effort. I'm trying to lead by example. You know what I mean? So if it's anything anyone could call me out on, I will accept it. But man, I see a whole different side of it. That is doing the action of what we talk about. So right now, man, to your points, I'm working. It's three particular points I'm working on, man, that mean a lot to me. So like you said, I've been active in community service work, man, for at least 10 plus years now. But prior to now, it really had just been, I see an issue that I want to tackle, and, I have support behind me. So, hey, we're going to link up. We're going to knock it out like this. Whether it was, the first thing we ever did was just passing out cold water to homeless people as they would be out in the streets and they would be looking to find shelter and stuff. Because I saw on the news one day how it was an influx of homeless people that were dying from dehydration and overheating. So linked up with a homeboy, we went and got ice and buckets and water, went and passed them out. And within the first day, it was a little girl that we gave some water to. And like, she started crying because she was so thirsty. It was looked at her daddy, was like, "Daddy, can I have another one?" And dude looked at me like, and I'm like, "Bro, like, you ain't got to say that." You know what I'm saying? Because like, as a man, it has to already be hard enough that your daughter is doing it. So for her to even, for you have to ask another man, I knew that she was going to be another. I'm like, "Bro, like," and it fucked me. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And that's what kind of really kickstarted everything I was doing. But I was doing it very disorganized, unorganized, however you said it. I was, you know what I'm saying, just doing it because I felt it and wanted to do it. So within the last 2 years, I really tried to get into my zone on what do I exactly want to focus on? What does that look like for me? And what does that entail? For me, you know, one of my friends calls me a care bear. Like, I care about everything. I want to save everybody. Obviously, that's not, you know what I'm saying, feasible or reasonable. So, you know, I sat down this past few months, it was January, at a think tank, and I really wrote down, like, what are my assets? Well, I know I have a vast network of people who have different professional skill sets, different passions. Let me put together, because people kept asking, like, when you doing something else, when you doing something else. So I kind of felt like people were looking at me to provide these opportunities, because if you really look at it, just getting involved with doing service or community service is not that easy. You have to know who to contact, what forms to fill out. You know, it's a lot of different steps. And what I know about people in 2020, people don't like a whole bunch of steps. No. So I'm like, well, let me get everything streamlined for you. So all you have to do is sign up, and I'm going to provide 4 to 5 opportunities every month. And it'll be across the spectrum, so you always have something that speaks to whatever it is that you care about. Now you have the opportunity to come. I'll set everything up. All you got to do is come lay it up. You know what I'm saying? So that's how I started with the Talented Temp Collective. And this, you know, it's gotten more advanced since I started that just a couple months ago, because, you know, COVID happened. So now I started getting into a lot of virtual stuff. So the programs that we had with different schools have been shut down, and I got to figure out what that's going to look like. But I've had so many, I'm actually glad that it's happened the way it did, because it helped me build a better foundation. It's helped me network with different people who can bring different values to. So, you know what I mean? I'm looking forward to the fall once the schools are able to let us know how that's going to look for programming and be able to implement that stuff. Another situation, I'm on the board for a company called Dear Fathers. They are a media platform that's basically kind of like your Bleacher Report for dads. Like, you know, it's a very, very cool situation, man. A couple of friends from St. Louis started it. So I was just going to be an advocate just because I thought it was cool as hell. It shows a Black narrative that's not really being told. And the way they do it is so cool and organic that I was like, I was drawn to it. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, hey, man, I just want to help y'all out, bro, because I think this is something that all Black men need to see, and people in general, just to understand, like, bro, like, you know, they have a lot of athletes that they have, they do podcast interviews with. So, you know, somebody hit me up like, hey, man, I want to get Brad Beal on the podcast. Can you hook that up for me? It literally took 30 minutes of me hitting Brad up to tell him what it was. But, hey, man, you know, hit my personal, we'll get it done. Because I saw how of a great father Brad was, how much he loved being a father, right? So you see a lot of these guys that are athletes, all people want to talk about is their athletics. You know what I'm saying, accomplishments and the things they do on the court. And they do talk about off the court, they don't talk about them being a father. But if you look on these guys' social media pages, you'll see how intense and how devoted they are to their children. You know what I mean? These things mean a lot to them, but they never get a chance to talk about them. So, you know, some of these interviews that are supposed to be 30 minutes end up being an hour because you're giving this man an opportunity to talk about something that he loves more than anything else in life. And I think that what these leagues need to understand is these young guys, Brad's 26. Ja Morant is what, 20, 21?
Oh, yeah, at the most.
He was a junior.
He wasn't a freshman.
So he might be 22.
Yeah.
Okay, let's say him and Jason Tatum's 21.
You sure about that, though? Oh, you sure? Okay.
So if Ja Morant's 22 and Jason Tatum is 21, and they are two of your biggest faces and youngest faces.
No, Ja Morant is 20.
20? Okay.
Is he?
Yeah, I'm looking. I was like, he was a freshman. He came out at the freshman year. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Well, 2021.
He did 1 year at Murray State.
So if he's 2021 and these guys are the future of your league, why would you not want to show the other, excuse me, show these young black kids that are watching your league who are, you know, driving this revenue for you, what that black leadership as a man looks like, what that look, you know what I mean, what they should be aspiring to. I feel like, you know, I don't know why you wouldn't want to do that or highlight that, but the leagues aren't doing a good job at that. And the Dear Fathers, they're bringing that out more and giving these guys opportunity to speak to these the kids need to hear. To even, hell, other grown men need to hear. You know what I'm saying? To be a motivating force for them to be more of a father, man. Like, you know, I'm a new father. My daughter was just born on Monday. And as man, much as people try to
prepare me, though, dog.
Appreciate that,
you
man. Literally,
you know, you live in a different life, though, dog. You live in a different life.
You know, it's been working with
as a girl dad. I'm telling you, you live a different life.
It's much different, man. And you know, as much as people try to prepare me for what this would feel like and what this looks like, there was nothing that could have prepared me to see this little person on Monday morning at 7:34 in the morning, you know what I'm saying? To watch her just grow over these last 3-4 days. You know what I'm saying? It's been amazing, man. And you know, I know there's something
I appreciate the fact that she's respectful too, and that she lets you get the last episodes of The Last Dance in. You know what I'm saying? We was talking about that on Saturday. I'm glad that she came into the world with a lot of respect. That shows that she was reared and raised right.
Man, but you know, they say that the Taurus girl and the Cancer dad is like the greatest bond. And she is proving, like, the fact that I've been down here able to do this interview and I don't hear a baby screaming her head off upstairs, you know, I think we might be good going forward. You know what I'm saying? That's going to be my little buddy. You know what I'm saying? But, man, I really feel
– It's an ebb and flow. It's an ebb and flow, man. It's an ebb and flow.
Man, I feel very strongly about, you know, the content that Dear Fathers is putting out, man. And, you know, I definitely suggest if you guys haven't checked it out, man, definitely do.
Where can they check it out again?
On Instagram is Dear.Fathers. It's the IG handle.
I'm following it right now.
Yeah, so just about, we just released an episode with Brandon Carr. Man, it's a lot of great content on there, dude. And it's, you know, constantly updated every day. And that brings me to my last deal, man, which is, you know, the newest. And it's called Melkira. So Melkira, man, is a healthcare app that is, you know, targeted for African-American community, man, which is healthcare-wise, one of the ones that need the most help. And we realized that with COVID happening, that it would destroy our communities more than any other. It exposed so much more. You know, I remember the debate of, well, COVID is killing black people because black people won't sit down at home. No, COVID is killing us because we have food deserts. We have healthcare access deserts. We have so many underlying issues, pre-existing conditions. It's a lot of shit that's playing into when we do get COVID, we're not able to recover like other races are.
It's a death blow. It's a thing where you're already sitting there on the brink of something serious that could happen, and this is just not even a push. This is a shove. You know what I mean? And it's a crazy thing. It's a crazy thing that impacts us that way because we have so many things, and because access to healthcare is one of the most underplayed yet serious situations that plagues, you know, minority community like ours from it. So yeah, I mean, it's just when you have something come along like this, and the severity of it, and the fact that we don't have access to that regular medical care that even allows us to have that that upkeep. Many of us, mm-hmm. I'm extraordinarily thankful to be in the position that I'm in, because I can care for myself. And if something goes wrong, it is just a matter of a copay and things like that. But that's mm-hmm. not everybody's life. You know, I have a choice about what I want to eat. You know what I'm saying? If I want to eat bad, you know, that's on me. If I want to eat good, that's on me. But so many people, going back to like the little girl and the father that you talked about with the water story, some people just got to be happy to get their hands on what they can. And that only lasts so long. That's when you're surviving, not thriving. And and those are the things about why, you know, we've had long conversations about this. I'm sure I'll talk about this on the show, why I believe in closing ranks around policies and around things that can make sure that we have sustainable growth and sustainable quality of life change, not just mm-hmm. something that's gonna make us better for the moment. And I think that focusing on our health through programs like that and through just raising the awareness and making people take it more seriously is really gonna be a thing that hopefully, I pray, we can come out on the other side of this with some lessons we wouldn't have learned any other way.
Yeah, and that's the thing, man. Like, you know, I've had to look at it from a different lens because, you know, I come from more of a privileged background than others. So, you know, things that are normal to me, I have to realize aren't normal in the sense of, you know, most people. So right. while I'm like, you know, while most people are like, man, and myself included, like, man, why don't you just go to the doctor? Why don't you just do X, Y, and Z? Well, shit, I'm worried about how I'm gonna feed my family, and I got more pressing concerns than my immediate health. Which is, you know, I guess would be foreign to most people, but that's somebody's fucking reality. You know what I'm saying? And, you know,
well, let's I want to pause to think about what you just said. You know what I'm saying? I have to take care of my family so I can't worry about myself. Now, think about the mindset that, you know, you're talking about with your daughter being born, being, what, 5 days old now, you know? And Daryl, think about how you've watched your daughter grow, you know, and things like that. And it just takes me back to a conversation I was having this morning with my father. And it's just crazy. First of all, the fact that we're talking about you all being fathers and I'm in my late 30s and I'm talking about still having conversation with my father. That's advantage right there. That's privilege right there. You know, so how we go about having those conversations and what you learn from. A lot of, I'm good. I don't have it. I just swallowed the wrong way.
You got that little Rona.
I get the little Rona three times a day, bro, still. But you know, that's privilege right there. And I think that one thing that we have to look at is how we can leverage our privilege. You know, whether it's me going back and still, you know, leveraging my father's, you know, treasure trove of knowledge that he's got. It's funny, we were even talking about that today. I was telling him, like, man, you know more than you give yourself credit for knowing. You know what I'm saying? And you need to leverage that. And the role that y'all play in y'all daughter's lives, and even just the unique bond of being a father with a daughter, and then add on to that as a black father with a black daughter, you know, and the things you got to get them ready for, you know, already at this point and young in their lives. Mm-hmm. And those are points of privilege that everybody doesn't have. So the ways that we can give back and really start to leverage our black privilege, we get so tied up in not liking white privilege and the things that bring and the how it's denied. I don't want us to focus on white privilege. I want us to start leveraging black privilege more. And I think that what you're doing with this and awareness and things like that on things that we overlook, like healthcare and the things that we have access to, that's leveraging black privilege, man. So I want to salute you for doing that. And you know, I definitely speak. Daryl is the blackest person I know. So, I mean, look at his hat.
I'm not that. No. I'm black, but I'm not black. I'm black. No,
you're black AF. You're the walking embodiment of that. But, you know, anything that we can do with the platform that we got here, you know, that we've spent years working on and building and is still growing and ascending, you know, we'd be more than happy to support anything that we can with that because I know that we're both believers.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So, like, you know, with Melcura, man, we are going to focus on, you know, we're gonna eventually branch out and do, you know, focus on all aspects of the health of the community. But you know, to us, it was important to start at literally the start of life conception, right? So, Black reproductive health is something that is a immediate concern, you know what I mean? Like, you have a Black woman is three times more likely to die during labor. You have, you know, the Black infant mortality rate is through the roof. So these are things that we need to tackle right now, right? So if I can help this mother get through her birthing process safely, if I can help this baby get to year one, year two safely, now I can help both the mother and the child, but more importantly, the child through his whole life cycle. You know what I mean? When it comes to pediatrics and
Hey, Brad, like, your camera's like been looking towards like to the left. Can you get it more center for us though?
Give me 1 second.
Like, literally, you know what I'm saying? You're looking.
Yeah, you're looking now.
Okay. Yeah. Before, you were looking like you were like on some like you trying to sun it. So like, yo, my nigga, I'm not saying no, man. Like, I'm telling you, you know.
That's because my camera, well, my view was here on this screen versus this screen.
Yeah. It's cool in general. I got the audio on it, but I'm saying for video wise though.
Gotcha.
It cats would be like, oh, they wouldn't even looking at you though. You know, he wouldn't even looking at you though. Audio wise, you're great.
Okay, cool,
just saying that this is a small little technical.
We want you to look into people's hearts and minds when you deliver this message.
There you go. That's what I'm saying. Before it was fine though. I mean, because you was actually looking over to us though for a while. But you going in though. I want you to get that message though directly to everybody though.
Where should I start it? Where we at?
What you were just touching on was about letting kids from inception support mothers from birth and things like
that. All right, cool. I'm ready. All right, so but yeah, man, like with Melchior, excuse me, and now I'm gonna start fucking up. So let me start over.
You got a little Rona real quick. It's all right.
But with us starting Melchior, the most important thing when we looked at the whole scope of the Black community and health is starting literally where life starts, and that's gonna be conception. So Black women reproductive health is one of the most important topics that we can handle, because that's literally making sure that Black woman is able to go through her birthing process and go through labor without dying. Because, you know, their rates are 3-1 right now on Black women dying during labor. The infant mortality rate for Black babies is 2 times more of other races. So making sure that we can secure the safety of those children, you know what I mean? And then we can make sure that their life cycle, you know what I mean, that we can help guide them and help the mother and help the father, like just help the whole family unit. But we have to make sure that this child gets here safe. We have to make sure that this woman is protected by, you know, whatever forces may be against her, man. So we have a workshop on June 4th, Create Her. And this is helping you build your maternal care crew. So, you know, I don't know if either one of you guys are familiar with doulas. Well, like doulas are, you know, a very big advocate right now as far as birthing for Black women.
You're on mute, D.
My bad. It's a real hard thing for women to be to get doulas because of the insurance situation with all that. Though it's a very, very, very hard thing for women, though. Doulas are super dope. Super dope.
Yeah, so there's ways to circumvent that. So you don't have to necessarily have a doula that's in birth. So going through our process, you know, excuse me, my significant other is a pharmacist. And
say your old lady. Let's say your old lady. That's how y'all CBC motherfuckers do that.
That's when you're giving bad advice, trying to get him beat up.
Hey, I'm not even listening to this guy.
No, I'm saying that's how CBC dudes do. That's how CBC dudes do. Like, you know, my girl. You know what I'm saying? Say your old lady.
My Gail. You know what I'm saying?
It's a Gail. I appreciate that. go ahead, G, my bad.
Yeah, but she's a pharmacist, man. So, you know, she has more of a medical view onto things. So when I initially brought up a doula, she was very apprehensive. Like, I don't know. So, you know, I think as she saw more celebrity like Serena and Sierra and some of these other Black women that are going through these issues, seeing them speak to how much that meant for them, she kind of came around to it. So I had, you know, one of the doulas that we have for this workshop, I created a group chat. You know what I'm saying? I was like, hey, you know, Kyra, Kyla, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, they kind of know each other a little bit, but like, I'm like, hey, you know, we have any questions? It's in the third. So she got to asking Kyra questions. And the responses was like, she was on it. I was even impressed myself. I'm like, damn, I wasn't expecting this. You know what I'm saying? But she knew so much, and she gave her a sense of comfort. So even the night of, while we were in the room, and they were talking about, we want to give you this and give you that because we got induced. She was like, well, she had questions because she has knowledge of what these things are because she's a pharmacist, but she doesn't know how that relates into the actual process. So she's asking Kyra via text about certain things and what should this look like this and the third, and Kyra was able to answer and give her a peace of mind. So while she wasn't in the room, her to even be able to have access to speak with her and get us, because basically all you're doing is getting a second opinion on the spot, right?
Right, real talk.
So yeah. she was able to get that, so it made everything so much better. I'm forever grateful to Kyra for being able, I mean, for being there, you know what I'm saying, and making herself accessible to that process. So, you know, for me, man, like, you know, and us getting ready for the launch, and, you know, we have all these women that want to give their testimonies. I've talked to 3 women in one day, and 2 of them had the same exact story about, you know, their complications, how they almost died. I had one, her son didn't take his first breath to 5 minutes after being born. Another one didn't take his first breath to 7 minutes after being born. And these are all avoidable situations, but because of the doctor and how the nurses treated them, these were their realities, right? And these women are anxious to get out and tell these stories because, one, nobody listened to them while they were in the labor and delivery room, so they almost lost their lives. So they want to be heard, and they want to be able to give these stories and experiences to other Black women so they won't go through the same things, or they can avoid them as much as possible. And that takes me to my next point. I believe as Black men, we have to be accountable and understand that, man, like, you know, the old age thinking of, you know, birth and pregnancy is a woman thing, right? Mm-hmm. That's not the case, man.
Because no, you live in that shit too, though. You live in that shit too.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? It affects all of us, bro. And if we don't start having these conversations with one another, and we don't start letting other brothers know, like, hey, man, look, these are things that your lady could be facing. These are the things you need to educate yourself on. These are the things you need to be aware of. So when you go into a labor delivery room, you can be her advocate. Because she's going to be sometimes be in so much pain or be on so much of the epidural and all that shit that they can just give the woman, hey, sign off on this because we're going to do X, Y, and Z because they want to. No, nigga, you fuck being out in the parking lot, your homeboys drinking and celebrating because you might be coming in and celebrating a fucking death because you wasn't there to make sure she was good and taken care of. So we got to be more accountable as men, and that's something that we're pushing as well, man. I'm developing a labor and delivery playbook so that men can have pretty much just a quick sheet of things to know, recognize, and see during that time, so they can either, you know, you can go study it and read up on things like I did, because the first time we were pregnant, we lost twins.
Word, wow. Dog.
Yeah, 2017, dude. We had stillborns. Man. So it was things that she was
damn, going man, through. That's some deep shit though, man. That's some deep shit, man.
Yeah, so it was things that she was going through that because I was being ignorant and thinking that it was a woman thing, I wasn't able to be there fully help her with. So that was my first opening, you know what I'm saying, wake up call. And then going through this, I'm like, I'll be damned if I let anything happen to her or this little girl. So, dude, I was on fucking edge the last couple of weeks, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I'm beyond thankful, man, that we were able to get through our situation. You know, with no complication, both mom and daughter are fucking healthy, but it's my mission to make sure that I can help save as many other lives through this application as possible, man. And, you know, if hopefully some brothers are hearing me right now that are expecting or have gone through similar situations that can come reach out to me, bro. And we're going to put together the support group to help, man. So guys can feel safe and have these conversations, because it's not no soft shit by no means. It's actually some extra man shit to take that accountability and be responsible for this life that you created and for this woman that you created this life with, man. So
well, and I'm glad you put it that way too, because it sounds ridiculous, man, but I think that some of the things that as men we're the most out of touch with, mm-hmm. is how many different things women got to go through. Because like let's take it back a couple of versions of ourselves, you know what I'm saying? Like I'm like, I don't want to hear about no period. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to hear about this. I don't want to hear about that. That shit is gross, son. Like, but like, really, this is what women got to deal with, like, every month of their life. They have to deal with these different things like that. Mm-hmm. Like, it took me literally my relationship advancing, you know, to the point that it got to not too far before I got engaged even, mm-hmm. that I was, like, standing up and, like, buying tampons and stuff like that, because I'm just like, yo, this shit kind of whack. I'm not going to be...
You should be fine buying 10 pounds. That ain't shit, though, man. That's fucking a regular thing about motherfucking car.
I never understood that shit either. Like, nigga, obviously they're not for me. You know what I'm saying? Like, exactly. So what does it matter?
But the thing about it is you got to get to a point mentally where you're comfortable doing things like that, because one of the biggest things against for men is we got to repeal so many layers of being told, you know what I'm saying?
I think it's worse me buying a Drake CD than me buying tampons.
Oh, God.
I'm going to do both.
Oh, Brad. I forgot. Brad is a big Drake fan. I'm sorry. My fat.
Big Drake fan, bro.
Yeah, I know.
You're hard to smoke.
For me, that is me, like, going, like, you know what? I, that
That ain't mine. That's my daughter, though. You see her right here, though. She likes, you know, she likes Future Drake. Like, come on,
the
man.
Thing about it is,
and I'm old than saying I'm being in the line buying a CD, though.
But like the thing about it is that a lot of the times, Street a lot side. Of men don't end up in spaces where they have to be sensitive to women's situations until they are stuck in one. Stuck is the wrong word, but you know what I mean. So they find themselves in one where they got to be accountable, and by that time it might be too late. You know what I'm saying? By that point you on skates. You're just trying to roll with the punches. So I think that like by getting the message out about the options that are there and giving people the opportunity to have access to knowledge that otherwise they might not even be aware of that or the science behind why it's so important, that's an invaluable tool. And you know what I'm saying? And that's, yeah, to your point, that's way more important than being outside having a victory cigar while there's a war going on that you need to be a part of.
A fucking war. Now I look back to like all my friends that had babies and I would come to the hospital with a bottle of Remy and all that shit. I'm like, God damn, I was a fucking asshole. I was taking away, you know what I'm saying, from
that time,
this situation, because I'm making it about me and my buddy, and it's bigger than that shit.
But
man,
honestly, you shouldn't even come to the hospital think it's not for you as a homie, though, period. Yeah. Your thing is on the back end. It's the thing is like, yo, when he got his shit situated, come through, I got a bottle.
I'll wait for you to go to the crib, man.
Or you come through my crib. You ain't gonna go. You make sure your crib is settled. You come through my crib, have a drink with me.
And the crazy thing about that is that, you know what I'm saying, I've been to the hospital twice, not for myself, but for my brother. And one time his baby mom passed from the complications during the
hold
day,
on,
you know?
What?
And I don't know. What? I'm not gonna go much deep into it than that because it ain't my story. But you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like,
damn,
you talk about what happened.
I know you
like,
for a long time though. I ain't know this.
I've seen what happens on the other side of it. You know what I mean? And that's just it's crazy how that works out. So if we can put ourselves, you know, we talk about advancing and having different things like that. If we can put our mindset in a place where we know what we need to do and know that it's our job as well as theirs, it's a lot more than just her sitting there pushing, doing the manual labor. We put ourselves in that place. That's an awesome thing.
Man, like, Daryl, I don't know if you watched, like, the actual birth and shit.
Nigga,
bro,
I was
like,
sitting right there, though, dog. Come on, man.
That nigga, the vagina.
It's just crazy, man. Dude, I had to go to the bathroom and cry, though, dog. I had to go to the bathroom and cry, dog.
Man, that's the woman needs to be celebrated.
I had a full breakdown, dog. It was so bad. One of the nurses came in and was like, yo, what's going on? Because I was just so broke down. Dude, man, I have been going through so much shit in my life at that time, though. You got to think, I'm coming from the promoter shit, all this shit. I literally was blogging. People was paying for me to go out different cities doing my shit. And, like, this little motherfucker named Xander Asada Frierson came in and was like, yo, nigga, you gonna take care of me, nigga. And she looked, no, real talk. That motherfucker when she came out, that nigga, she looked up, not nigga, she's my daughter. No. She looked up at me though, and she didn't look straight. She looked straight back to me on the right side though, and was like, sup? And I was like, I got you. Every day, I got you. Mad to tell you, like, dude, I got you. Like, dude, like, Xander, go roll.
Xander lives her own program. I love her for it too.
Yeah, no. She has literally, her life is different than our lives. She literally, she'll call Matt and be like, hey, what's going on with your Wi-Fi though? Like, she'll have her tablet. She'll be like, hey, yo, G, I know y'all are recording, but she'll tap them. She'll come over, she'll tap. Like, hey, this is your domicile. I know my home. I can talk to him about that. But we're here with you, Matt.
Xander walked into my housewarming and walked past me, everybody that was there, and opened up a box of pizza and was like, and looked at Daryl and was like, hey, go ahead and pull this out for me and get this going. I'm ready to go.
And so, I did that. And I did it.
She walked past everybody like she had like literally put the payment down on the crib. So it's always fascinating for me, man, to see the relationship between fathers and daughters. It's most certainly and you talk about people being a servant leader. A servant leader is a father with a daughter. So,
Like I told Brad, like, dude, like, real talk, man, having a daughter will teach you way more than having a son.
Yeah, I believe that for sure, man.
Like,
Matt,
way more.
Matt, I asked Matt if we're still recording on Friday. He's like, man, if it's cool, if it's going to be good with you, I'm like, I don't control my fucking life anymore. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I'll let you know when she lets me know. You know what I'm saying?
It's going to make you, if you're interactive, it's going to make you a better man, though, in general, with your lady, though, period, though. It's going to make you, or even if y'all not together, though, any future lady, you can, if you're there, you will understand different aspects of what it is to be a man, though, and have a daughter.
Right. Nah, I feel that for sure.
It's like small little things, though. Like, you may have got some stuff on your own, though, but it's like, it's different when you like, yo. Xander be running through this motherfucker, though, like nobody business.
Yeah. But see, that leads me to know I need to wrap up here in a second, too.
Yeah, let's go.
No, you're good, man. Let us know, man. You dropped.
That's how CBC cats are, though. CBC cats are, you know, they gotta figure out different levels. They figure out where they at, though, and everything, though. Like, they
you know what, man? If we did like a straight, like, alumni, like,
our alumni is better than yours, though. Before.
No fucking way, dude.
No. Okay, do you have? No. Matt, you can close your video office if you want to.
Oh,
though.
No, now that you're talking about notable alumni, I'm definitely here now.
No. Do you have James Gunn?
I don't know who the fuck that is.
All the Guardians of the Galaxy, all that shit, that's SLU.
I don't watch.
Y'all ain't got right. Congressman. Y'all ain't got fucking. Y'all got a Hall of Famer. Because I know Larry Hughes is dope. I love Larry Hughes. We got a Hall of Famer, though.
Who's that?
Ed McCauley.
Okay. But do you have a diamond selling artist?
Okay. Matt, let me cut your I can control this. I'm only cutting Matt's camera.
You let me know when you want to put together something and we'll
No. There's no way that you can deal with us, though, because we got better soccer players.
We don't have any, so I'm out of this. I'm out now. I'm gone.
We got you, Taylor Twellman. Shout out to Taylor Twellman. We got James Twellman. You got James Griezmann. You got all this, though, man. Y'all got nigga athletes, though, which is fine. I'm great with that.
Mike Shannon is a Hall of Famer. What are you talking about?
Okay, that's fine. Y'all got one. We
okay,
got
you
like,
just named one. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about. I got 30, 40 people that I can name off the top.
We right now this year we have a McDonald's okay. All-American
y'all,
and a Gatorade
y'all know
player
the,
of the year.
The sports machine, Matt. You know the sports machine?
Like Mike Bush sports machine?
No. The real sports machine. You know what I'm talking about? The one that we have on Sundays that was international that
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
That's a SLU dude.
Here's the thing, you don't give a fuck, and we keep it as black too though.
If you want to keep it just black though,
listen, as well. I'm gonna step in here real quick because first of all, I know Brad gotta go be a father.
But I gotta get him though. Me and Brad gotta have a whole 2-hour drinking session, and Brad, you can come through the crib. We can have a bottle of Crown.
He can't do this for the next.
Oh, no, you just had your baby, though. You can't.
Here's the thing I'm going to say.
We'll do that in 2021.
I'm just happy to know that I actually know real brothers that went to private schools because I didn't know about that until I got out of high school. Because even in high school, it was different circles. So I'm glad that I'm glad to know that that y'all kept y'all blackness, that it wasn't like a Sammy Sosa situation. And then if anything, it made y'all even blacker.
It makes you way more
blacker. I'm proud to know both of you brothers, Brad, real quick. Tell people where they can find your information at, because I want to drive people towards that, and I want to make sure that everybody knows what to do.
This for during.
Oh, okay.
Oh, hold on, man. Okay, it's all good. Our color's still embedded in y'all's, though, too, unless you're a Q. All
right, this is some gang purple shit. And gold is royalty, brother.
Right now, that's if you're a Q.
Or if you like Crown Royal,
because
I do appreciate purple
and gold. No, and thinking so, I love Crown Royal. You know, I love Crown Royal. All
right, so you can.
You know what's so bad about me though? You know, I don't. I take the bag right off though and throw it to the side though, just because of CBC.
Man, look, you can.
I don't want it to be on me.
You can find us on Instagram, man. The Talented Temp Collective. So. We'll have a lot of information about events that we're doing in the St. Louis area and, all of our Eventbrite virtual workshops and everything will be found on there as well. That's going to be the Talented 10th 10 TH Collective on IG, and then Dear Fathers is Dear Period Fathers on IG as well. You know, Facebook is the Talented 10th Collective. You can find us from there. Look myself up, Brad M. Edwards on Facebook, and Reese23 on Instagram, man. But you know, any one of those handles you come to, you'll find some information about everything that's going on.
You can go online, though. You can go figure out losers in life, and then they will be on the.
We're doing a great thing.
No, because he came in hard, though. I was trying to be cool early, though. He came in hard on us, though. He came in hard on Sluta early.
We're cutting this out. I didn't even talk about the time. All he is doing
is making a fool of himself, and that's what Sluta guys do.
No, that's fine. No, no, that's the whole thing. Like, yo, I'm not going to entertain the real facts of things, though, in general. No, the real facts. It's the Donald Trump thing, though. Like, I'm not going to entertain real facts. You know, like, real facts.
Y'all are right down the street from each other. Y'all could have
No, I fuck with Brad, though. Brad's one of my favorite dudes, though, man. But I can't let him slide with this, though.
Hey, can he hoop? He needs to come hoop with us when we get back started.
Dude, I was the starting point guard, though. When I got the whole story about the Larry Hughes trying to dunk on me, and I moved out the way, though, and then my coach put me on the bench.
Hey, well, we're going to get these open gyms back going, man, probably like
Can we really – let's just say 2021. Let's just go. Everybody just say 20. Now, if it comes earlier, great. We got to do 2021 with everything, period.
What's that?
I'm saying anything interacting, you got to say, we're going to do
it. Oh, y'all can do that. We're going to have a thermometer at the door, and I'm hoping in this summer.
Okay.
That's a damn sure. But now, Matt.
They called me earlier and said softball season starting up. I said, I will see.
No, look, Matt is worse than me, though.
Softball might not be cool with some of them cats that's in that BMAC league, though, because, you know, that's them non-conformers up there. That's that, I'm not wearing a mask. That takes my rights away. I'm like,
I bet. Yeah, now you can do that. You can do softball at Forestwood. You know what
I'll do that.
Man, but look, I just got my text.
Yeah, you know, though. Thank y'all for listening, though, dude. Thank y'all for listening to this episode of the Scenario Remix, the Puffy joint.
Was it called? I appreciate the y'all, man.
No, no, Brad, thank you for coming on, though, man. We're going to appreciate you, man. You know, even with CBC, it's all good.
Yes, sir. You guys take it easy, man.
All right, now.
Be good.
Matt, you good?
Yeah, we still recording.
Yeah, let me turn it off. Because I hated it. It took me so long to get that other one off, though.